Hey, y'all, it's Lark
and Kim
from Kudzu Killers, Homicide and Sweet Tea, and we're pleased to announce our brand new show, Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
We're going to have a good time yakking about paranormal phenomena like ghosts
and monsters and conspiracy theories
and Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
You know I'm partial to Bigfoot.
Right. Anyway, we hope you come listen to our new paranormal show and have some fun
in 2021. See, I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
Stop it.
You'll be the ghostest with the mostest.
Cut it out.
We love parapsychology and cryptozoology.
Welcome back to another Forensic Fridays on Kudzu Killers. I'm Lark, and I'm here with my best bud, Kim.
Yeah.
Hey, Kim.
Hey there.
So today's my story, and Kim's going to be shocked and amazed, as well as the rest of you are, I hope. It's got all kinds of great aspects to a sad story, but some resolution, and I don't want to say necessarily a happy ending, but some positives that came out of this. There's so many twists and turns in this story. So up front, sexual harassment in the workplace, necrophilia, rape, infant death, controlling and obsessive behavior, and ultimately murder. So again, if those are your triggers, you've been warned. And I will say that there are some redeeming conclusions, so stick with us to the end. And here we go. In 2012, 21-year-old Alicia Bromfeld was one semester away from graduating with degrees in forensic psychology and criminal justice. She was a really pretty girl, and at the same time, she was working at a job she'd had since she was 16 years old. Alicia was 6.5 months pregnant with a little girl, and she was going to be a single mom. And the father didn't really want to be involved, but she didn't care. I mean, she was totally thrilled to become a mom. Super excited. Her boss was a 36-year-old by the name of Brian Cooper. That makes him 15 years her senior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had taken a shine to our girl 5 years previously when she was just 16. They both worked at the garden department of Home Depot in Plainfield, Illinois. For the past 5 years, he'd been delusional and obsessive that she was his girlfriend. Alicia didn't see it that way, but she tried to be nice and cordial to him. She was never, ever interested in him romantically. Yet, because Alicia was desperate to keep her job, she took his verbal abuse and tried to keep the peace. He would bully and swear at her in public, at work, in front of the customers, berating and belittling her for basically any reason or slight that he felt. Throwing things around in the store and generally trying to intimidate or terrorize her into obeying him.
Right? I'm shocked he got away with that at Home Depot. I would have thought someone around would have turned him in.
Well, you know, he was always threatening her that he was going to fire her for just any little foolish reason. You know, if you don't come to work today, she's sick as a dog. Well, if you don't get here, I'm going to fire you. Well, she was young, so think about it, you know.
True.
When you're 16, you're going to believe anything. And she was afraid. She wasn't pregnant at that point, but he'd already been kind of laid the law down for the past 5 years. And so all of this took place at the Home Depot, and people saw it. Customers saw it, other managers and supervisors saw it, and while their friendship, and I use that term loosely, culminated in his asking her to go to his sister's wedding, which was going to be held 4 hours away in this, like, idyllic little, I don't want to say village, a little town. It's called Door County, Wisconsin, alongside Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he lied to her, and he told her that they were all going to be staying in the hotel where the whole wedding party was going to be, and that they would return the next day. So that seems kind of like, not exactly a party, but it seems more safe, right?
I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand. She's young. We all do young, stupid things. 21 is not necessarily mature. No offense, y'all. But, you know, plus she's been intimidated by him for a long time. So anyway, in reality, Brian Cooper booked the Sand Bay Beach Resort for their accommodations. And on the August 2012 morning of the wedding, Alicia calls her mom. Sherry Anichi is her mom. Now, she tells her that they had a fight and they're packing to come home. Now, her mom is not really clear what they argued about. And Sherry says basically, hey, you know, you can't do that to his sister. This is this huge deal of a wedding. He's supposed to walk her down the aisle, you know, play nice. Mm-hmm. So she goes back to him and they decide to stay for the wedding. Brian Cooper walks his sister down the aisle at this intimate outdoor ceremony. And they celebrate the newlyweds at the reception. And after the last champagne toast, Cooper and Alicia return to their resort. Because it's kind of a little resort town, you know, destination on the lake. So the next morning, a soaking wet Brian Cooper walks into a convenience store, a gas station, and he asks the clerk to use her phone to call 911. He calmly tells the 911 operator that he wants to report the murder of Alicia and where she is. And that he did it.
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind that this was all caught on the gas station surveillance. Mm-hmm. As he spoke to the 911 operator, he basically, you know, it's all on the recording of 911. He did it in front of the clerk. She heard it too. So moments later, the Door County Sheriff's deputies arrived at the gas station. And they took Cooper on down into custody and down to the station. So, meanwhile, while he's down in the Hooskow, Door County Sheriff's Investigator Mark Winkle learns of this bizarre 911 call, and he immediately heads over to the resort where they were staying. And when Detective Winkle arrived, he saw a dead woman in her 20s. She was laying on the floor nude, but she did have a blanket covering her up to about her chest. At this point, her head was on a pillow, though she was obviously deceased. And it appeared as if she was resting. So with a little closer examination of the body, you could see that there were injuries, bruises, and scratches, and marks around her neck. I mean, she'd obviously struggled, but she lost. So while this ghastly crime scene is being processed, Winkle heads to the station to interview Brian Cooper. Now, Brian tells Winkle how he and Alicia argued earlier that day. By the end of it, that Alicia had had enough, basically. And she just told him, look, you know, when we get back, we're just not going to be friends. There were never a friendship. We're not going to be friends. But keep in mind, we all know that there was never a friendship to begin with.
Right.
And remember, Alicia only agreed to attend the wedding because Cooper threatened to fire her if she didn't. So he says that after the wedding and the reception, they went back to the room. And that's pretty much where things took a really tragic turn. So in Cooper's words, we got back to the hotel and she just went to bed and I was drinking. That's important, okay? He continues to say the reality was setting in that there wasn't going to be even a friendship when we got back, which was going to be today. I was debating what I was doing and what I was doing some prepping on my thinking about harming her. So Alicia's still sleeping on the bed and he's outside pacing and smoking and becoming frustrated and really winding himself up. Now, apparently, the original fight that we didn't know about with her mom, he'd ask her about watching a TV show together when they got home because they used to record something and he would get her to come over and watch this with him. And she commented that there wasn't going to be any more watching TV shows or anything, that they were done. So this was the trigger that finally, in his thoughts, as he explains to our detective, he just snapped. So at that point, she's in bed. He jumps on her, pins her down, and starts to strangle her. Well, she wakes up and freaks out and starts to fight back. So she's begging for him, think of the baby, think of the baby, you know? I don't care about me, but just think of the baby. So she goes, she somehow bites his finger, and she draws blood, and it pisses him off, and they roll onto the floor, where he continues to strangle her, and he kills her. So if choking the life out of her wasn't enough, he went on to say that he took her clothes off and had sex with her dead pregnant body.
I just don't even get this. I just Yeah, this is just
her dad almost 7 months pregnant, right? So after raping her postmortem, he covered up her body with a blanket and put the pillow under her head. And that was how, you know, our detective found them. So after this, he suddenly realizes, oh my gosh, and he tries to kill himself. So first he tries with a butter knife. Really?
Right.
And then he tries with a corkscrew.
Can I say that I tried to kill myself so they won't put me on the gurney for a lethal injection, please?
So then, because neither one of those things works, he decides he's going to go sleep in the bathtub. And then the next morning, he drives to a park somewhere in that neighborhood. Because remember, there's lots of lakes and this and that.
Right.
So he swims out into the bay and he tries to drown himself. Remember, he was wet when he showed up.
Yeah, right. Tried to drown himself.
Yeah,
that's really easy to do. You stick your head in the water in the bathtub.
Oh, yeah.
I don't pull out.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't really committed to that, I wouldn't say.
No, I don't think he was committed to a suicide whatsoever.
Yeah. No. So, you know, he got out there and he realized, I can't do this to myself. So he swam back and he tried to find the gas station to call 911. And, you know what? I find it really odd now, Kim. Don't want to put words in your mouth, but I find it odd that there's no mention of him having a cell phone. Now, who doesn't have a cell phone in 2012?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't think about that.
You're going on a road trip. You're a manager / supervisor at Home Depot and you don't have a cell phone? What?
Maybe he lost it in the lake when he was swimming out to drown himself.
I don't know, but I really do think like you do that this was all show and this is just for show and he wasn't remorseful in the least.
No, not at all.
He wasn't remorseful for her. He was sad because she rejected him and now she was dead, you know?
Yeah, he was sad that he was going to get caught.
Yeah. So then it's like, quick, I gotta show somehow that I was distraught about it all. But that's the, I call double BS, like a friend of mine says. Mm-hmm. So at this point, Detective Winkle asks Cooper if he's ever harmed anyone before. And lo and behold, he admits and says, yes, my ex-girlfriend.
Shocking.
Truly. Yeah, right. Exactly. So he says, I just couldn't get through to her. So I tied her up for the purpose of trying to talk to her. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, y'all. Seriously? Yeah, to tie her up. Wow.
If you have to tie somebody up to get them to listen to you, it's time for you to figure out they don't want to listen to you.
Let it go.
Yeah.
We were just having this conversation, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
Let it go. So when it was all horrifically said and done, what was Brian Cooper's motive for killing Alicia Bromfield and her unborn baby girl?
She rejected him.
In his words, he said he didn't want to go back home and be alone.
Well, you know what? That's, yeah.
That's life in the big city, if you ask me.
That's probably the truth. He wasn't going to have a friend anymore, and if he couldn't have her, nobody else could have her.
Well, exactly.
That's a lot of the motives for murder.
Exactly. Yeah. And
poor girl.
So when asked if he meant to kill her, he just simply said yes. Mm-hmm. So Brian Cooper was charged with 2 counts of first degree intentional homicide and third degree sexual assault of a corpse. Now, I'm not a shrink, but I started thinking about some stuff because in my other life, I encounter a lot of this personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's just say. And so I looked this up and I looked up something called obsessive love disorder. And nobody mentions this. And they don't mention this in court. They don't mention it in the trials going forward. But as I was listening to all of these things that he was doing to her, I was really connecting the dots. So with the rest of our little story, I'll see what you think as we go along. But let me just read you the definition of obsessive love disorder. Obsessive love disorder is when someone exhibits delusional jealousy with escalating tools of psychological control or other forms of control in an effort to keep their love interest / object close. Examples of that include controlling money or food, and in extreme cases, stalking and using violence. Attempts to monitor or otherwise control their love object's life and activities. Mm-hmm. Now, what do y'all think?
That sounds pretty on the spot.
That's pretty accurate to me. And nobody brings this up in this trial as we move forward. Now we're at the trial, okay? Despite Brian Cooper's very detailed confession, they had these 911 calls, they have all this interview that same night where he flat out confesses to Winkle. So when he comes up for trial, shockingly, he enters a plea of not guilty. And what he claims for his defense is called voluntary intoxication, saying he was too drunk to know what he was doing when he killed Alicia.
Did anybody do a drug alcohol level on him?
I don't think so, because that wasn't brought up. I read the trial notes and everything.
So that's a pretty safe argument for him, because nobody can prove he's lying.
Well, exactly. But at the same time, there's more to all this. So just a second. So at the trial, Alicia's mom hears the 911 call and the interrogation of his confessing to the killing. And all of this were revealed in court. More evidence of how really perverted and obsessed he was with her daughter. Because during a search of Cooper's laptop computer, cops found multiple videos of Alicia shot in Plainfield, Illinois' home, in his home. Mm-hmm. He had installed a spy camera after drilling a small hole in a triangular shelf that was positioned in front of his toilet.
Uh-huh.
Y'all following
me? I was just going to say, in the bathroom. Yep.
Of course. So Alicia's mom testified that he would ask her to go over there and take his dog out when he wasn't there. And he had these mm-hmm. spy cameras in there capturing her going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he also brought a spy camera to the Wisconsin resort where he killed her, and he'd hidden it in a trash can in their bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
The spy cam actually did capture her getting out of the shower, naked, of course.
Of course.
Now, after 5 days of testimony, including Brian Cooper taking the stand on his own defense, the case went to the jury. Now, keep in mind, the jurors had watched him on videotape confess to the killing of Alicia Braunfeld and her unborn baby girl, Ava Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
She had already named this baby even before she was born, and she was 7 pounds in her womb at the time of her death.
Wow.
So she was going to be a big baby, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to believe the verdict was a hung jury.
I got to say, I'm not shocked, really. I kind of wondered if that's what it would be. These people...
Go ahead. You
know, well, people these days, they probably felt like the victim was to blame. I mean, people think that these days, that the person who dies, who is murdered, holds responsibility for the actions of the other. And since she went off to this wedding with him, that's despicable to me, because she felt forced to go off to this wedding with him.
Well, exactly. And you're exactly right, because there's a lot more to this story. And as I was reading some comments on some other stories, there was a lady that said that she had been to the, she was commenting and rebutting all of this victim blame. There was a lot of victim blaming. And they were all saying, well, she should have known, and y'all should have never let her go. And,
I hate that stuff.
They were totally saying, she should have known better. She should have known better. And then, you know, and this other lady was saying, she was defending the mom and saying, hey, you know, she thought she was an adult. She was giving her the benefit of the doubt. And you just can't blame the victim.
She was 21 years old and had been harassed by this man for 5 years. She was scared of him.
Well, she was scared of him. And remember, he's 15 years older than her.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of people are trying to say that her, and maybe the jury thought this too, that her family and friends had some culpability here and said, hey, don't do that or whatever. But at the end of the day, she's 21 and she was feeling... just like any abusive relationship, even though they weren't in a relationship.
She didn't want to go, though. If there's any culpability, if there's any culpability for any family member of hers, it's her mother. Because her mother basically told her, shamed her into going. And I'm sure she bears a tremendous amount of guilt for doing that.
Well, she does.
She said to her, you need to go because you'll embarrass him. I'm thinking she probably didn't know the harassment that her daughter was going through with this guy, because I mean, she's going over to his house to watch videos. How harmful can he be if she goes over to his house to watch videos, right?
Right.
And so, although she probably shouldn't blame herself, it was probably her pushing her daughter to go. That's why she went. But I would never blame the mom either, because she probably had no clue what was going on there.
Yeah, I feel like her mother didn't know the original backstory, right, you know, to all of this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, the ultimate thing where they went there, I mean, I can see her mom's point of view when she said, hey, you know, he's there to walk his sister down the aisle. Oh my gosh, she really
right,
wanna,
exactly.
You want to take, get, yeah. You're going to take the hit for ruining this destination wedding. Oh, just see it through and come on home. You know, I mean, it sounds easy, simple enough. Who
yeah,
would have
like
thought?
I said, she probably didn't know all of the backstory and all the stuff that this guy had been doing
right,
all along
right.
and all the threats that had been made and things like
right.
that. I don't think she would have, no mother would have ever
right.
pushed her along to go, you know?
Right. I feel really horrible for her mom.
Of course.
And the thing is that, you know, she was shocked. Her mother was just really shocked, especially since the majority of the jury, if not all of them, not quite clear on that, but they were all women, I think. Alicia's mom, Sherry, was just devastated and disgusted and just must have been horribly shocking
well,
to her.
A hung jury does not mean he was acquitted. So did they retry him?
Yes. So we're moving on to that. So in the meantime, Door County Sheriff's Investigator Mark Winkle, remember our man, he was really mm-hmm. outraged too.
Good for him.
Yeah. Because he really thought that this conviction was like a slam dunk, man.
Well,
you know?
Of course. They had a confession.
Exactly. They had a crime. They had a defendant who confessed. They had the evidence that matched his confession. They had the videotaped confession. They played all this stuff in front mm-hmm. of the jury.
And they had a bunch of judgmental people on the jury who, instead of blaming the murderer, blamed the victim.
Yes, but they believed the voluntary intoxication defense. Mm. That's really what this came down to. And so
I don't give a crap if you're drunk. If you murder somebody, you murdered somebody and you need to pay for it. Drunk, drugged up, whatever.
I agree. And so that's what we're getting to here, which you're going to love. So Detective Winkle commented that he didn't believe that intoxication was ever an issue in this particular situation because Cooper was able to recall the crime in so much detail. I mean, mm-hmm. he could tell the detectives step by step what he did with details of what was actually going through his head.
Not just, I went over here and did this. I went over there and did that.
Right. If he was really drunk at this juncture, he would wake up and go, I woke up and she was just dead. But, you know.
Yeah, he didn't do that.
So he was found guilty of third degree sexual assault, which is, you know, basically raping her after the fact. So devastated by this decision, Sherry's not going to take this lying down. Yay, our Sherry. Alicia's mom began a mission on her own.
Good.
And she basically said, never again did I ever want a parent, a friend, or a family to sit in a courtroom and hear alcohol being excuses for anything.
Good for her.
So here's what she does. You're going to love it, Kim. I loved it. I loved it. So she goes on to say, the very next day, we woke up and we had a meeting with all of Alicia's friends and family. And that's when we started to lobby to change the law. Isn't that awesome?
Good. It is awesome.
So Sherry took this tragedy of a mom losing her child in such a violent way, and she channeled that energy into a campaign to convince lawmakers to change the law of voluntary intoxication. And guess what? It paid off because in an unbelievable feat, Sherry, A-N-I-C-I-C-H, I don't know.
Lark's not great with names. It's okay.
I just am not. So I'm sorry. I'm spell it A-N-I-C-I-C-H. Sherry got the voluntary intoxication law banished from the books in Wisconsin and in 31 other states, y'all.
Good. Good.
And guess
good,
what?
Good.
Guess what? She did. Go mom, right?
Yeah.
So she did this all before his next trial.
Oh, good.
She
that was
got
quick.
She got on the stick, sister. I'm telling you, but the sad part here is that in a pretty cruel twist of fate, it didn't apply to his trial.
Oh, no.
Isn't that brutal?
That is.
Because his voluntary intoxication defense was grandfathered in.
Oh.
So he was able to use it on the second go around, which was
It really was, it wasn't even a year later. So she changed these laws in less than a year.
Yeah, that's fast. Yeah.
I know. That's just phenomenal. And that's why, not only with Wisconsin, but I hate to say that her daughter's death was a little the whole details of her death was overshadowed by more details on that she got all this changed. So that's why I was trying to tell this three-pronged story here of the actual murder to give, you know, Alicia, her story too, really. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so almost a year later, trial number two comes up. Jurors hear the testimony from Brian in his trial. They hear it from the wedding guests describing how inebriated he was or wasn't on the night that he killed Alicia. Mm-hmm. So after about a week, the case went to the jury. And within an hour, the verdict of guilty on two counts of first degree. Yay! Intentional homicide for the murder of Alicia Bromfield and her unborn child.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
So you got a bunch of good stuff.
Served.
Yep. You got a lot of good stuff coming out. And there's even more good stuff that I'm going to tell you in a second. So he was sentenced to two consecutive life terms in prison. And Miss Sherry A, through her incredible heartbreak, wants others to learn from their tragedy, to really listen to your children and pay attention. But wait, there's more. Not done. Even after getting this voluntary intoxication laws change, she goes after a freaking Home Depot. I love it.
Well, good, because obviously if he was doing this to her in the store and people were observing it and nobody turned it in, there's culpability there. Yeah.
For years. Now, if y'all don't know by now or haven't figured out by now, Kim and I would never let something like that happen. If we saw something like that, we are going to step in. And that's kind of the point here. If you see somebody like that, oh my God. So she goes after Home Depot for being a part of Alicia's death. She sues Home Depot for wrongful death, claiming that the retailer had a duty to protect her daughter against Cooper's harassments. And I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they're culpable in her death per se, but they let this harassment keep going on for years and something should have been done about it. He should have been fired long ago.
Well, Alicia may not have been telling her mama, but she was telling people at Home Depot and everybody knew. Other people knew, other workers knew, other supervisors knew, and she wasn't the only woman that he'd harassed on the job, according to this complaint.
Really?
Other supervisors at Home Depot were well aware of his behavior towards other female employees. And they were young girls. Keep in mind, she was 16 when he started there, right?
Well, she was only 21, too. So,
well, at the time of her death, right?
Right.
And that's still young.
Very, yeah.
But before her was a young girl, a high school girl by the name of Jessica. And he started all this stuff, the only one that's really that we know of, with Jessica. And ultimately, she quit her job because she felt so uncomfortable working with him.
Of course she did, yeah.
I mean, he was doing the same thing to her that he did to Alicia, and he'd introduce them both as his girlfriends, not at once, but obviously. But he'd introduce them as his girlfriend, which is not true. He'd make comments about, you know, his genitals to her and rub himself on her.
Hardcore. He did that to me and I'd find me some bolt cutters there in Home Depot and take care of that situation.
Well, exactly.
But she was a young girl again.
Again.
I'm not. And, you know.
Well, yeah. I think many women have been confronted with the situation they are younger and even throughout life, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
it's often when you're younger because people who prey on girls like that, they know. They know the younger girls don't know how to deal with it, and that's why they pick them.
Well, exactly. And they push as far as they can. And even though this isn't a day and age when this should not have happened, it should never happen, but I mean, more so now. Think about it. It's the 2000s. So anyway, Jessica ultimately quit. She didn't make a fuss. She was young and afraid and she just left. But he continued to do the same stuff to Alicia for 5 more years. So court records state customers witnessed Cooper would throw and slam things around in the garden and parking lot. And he's all the while he's screaming obscenities and calling Alicia a slut and a whore. And he repeatedly denied her breaks and days off if he believed she was going to spend them with another man. Now, remember what I was talking to you about obsessive love?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what this is.
Yeah, it is.
So one Home Depot manager actually saw Alicia crying after Cooper denied her a break. You can't deny someone a break.
No, you can't. That's kind of the law.
Yeah. But, you know, this is totally obsessive, dangerous man, if you ask me. I mean, scary, controlling and obsessive. And even though he killed her, in that snap moment, I personally feel, and this is my opinion, that he would have eventually escalated to that in any way because he was already peeping and all that other stuff, right?
Well, yeah, he would have because she was going to deny him at one point or another. And so, you know, he's going to do it at some point.
Right.
But he isolated her and took her 4 hours away from anybody that could have helped her. And that's what they do.
Exactly. So you can't tell me that he wasn't planning something. Don't tell me you just snapped. You know, So anyway, Cooper's manager, about all the pitching things around and throwing and breaking things, his manager ordered him to take an anger management class. Oh my goodness. But of course,
I've heard that one before.
Yeah. But guess what? The manager never followed up to make sure he did it. So, you know, BFD, right? So while a federal judge ruled against Alicia's mom, the Chicago-based appeals court reversed the ruling with a sympathetic opinion, indicating the justices were horrified by the facts of the case. Judge David Hamilton wrote, "Cooper was not on the defendant's premises when he killed Alicia, nor did he use their chattel," which basically means he didn't use anything out of their place to kill her. Anyway, the judge goes on to say, "But he used something else the defendants gave him," meaning Home Depot, "supervisory authority over Alicia."
Mm-hmm.
"He threatened to fire her or reduce her hours if she didn't go with him to his sister's wedding. He thus threatened to take what the Supreme Court calls tangible employment actions." Mm-hmm. Gotta love this. "He could do that only because the defendants made him Alicia's supervisor." Now, Home Depot argued that even if they could have foreseen Cooper's harassment, his harassment may have still escalated from name-calling to physical violence, and it could not anticipate that he would actually murder Alicia. But the court said, hey, we'll leave that question for the jury. Ha ha. So Judge Hamilton continues to say, "The amended complaint recounts how Cooper's behavior escalated from private inappropriate comments and touching to workplace retaliation to continual harassment and monitoring and finally to public outbursts, verbal abuse, and physical intimidation. Hearing such evidence, a reasonable jury could easily find that the employers could and should have foreseen that Cooper would take the small further step to violence." I agree. In a footnote, the judge states his opinion that and really scorches Home Depot for, quote, "what might be described generously as excessive zeal by advocates." I love it.
Yeah.
Home Depot's lawyers minimized Cooper's behavior as, quote, "rude and mean to inanimate objects," unquote, and characterized Cooper and Alicia's trip to the wedding as a, quote, "date." Judge Hamilton was clearly appalled by Home Depot's statement to the lower court that Cooper had, quote, "made a few mistakes." Yeah, right.
Mm-mm.
The judge continues to say that anyone who saw Cooper throw a fit in the parking lot could have easily concluded that Cooper either was dangerous because he had lost control of himself or was trying to frighten Alicia. I'm loving this judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm loving Alicia's mom that she took it this far. So there has been a little bit of justice for Alicia and her little girl, Ava Lucille. And not that her mother really feels there's any justice, but ultimately, to honor their daughter, Alicia's parents have started an organization called the Purple Project. And each year, the organization sponsors a young single mother for the entire first year of her baby's life.
Oh, good.
Giving not only financial support, but also emotional support. So if anybody out there, if you are this person, you might be in need, or you know someone who needs help, or you want to contribute to the organization, it's called the Purple Project, and you can contact them at purpleproject.org. There's also a Facebook page with all this information on it, but I just thought it was, again, another story that, while it's sad that it's happened at all, it's pretty awful that it's happened so recently, but at least some good is coming out of it, from changing the laws and, again, the Purple Project.
Right. Well, good.
So that's it, y'all.
So we'll see y'all soon. And don't forget that on the 18th, that would be January 18th,
2000, 2 days from now,
that we have our new sort of sister show coming out, which is called, Kim?
Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
Two Chicks and a Crucifix. Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
Okay. Moving right along.
So thanks again for being here, y'all. We're so happy that you're seem to be enjoying things. If you want more, keep letting us know. And y'all have a great week. We love y'all. Don't forget to don't bury the bodies without us.
Have a great weekend. Bye, y'all.
Bye.